Greetings and welcome to the sixth installment of our podcast series, The Workforce Lens, brought to you by Tarrant County College in North Texas. I am Shannon Bryant, Executive Vice President for Corporate Solutions and Economic Development, and I will be your host, moderating strategic conversations with employers and economic developers on all things related to preparing and growing the workforce today and the future. Today, please help me welcome our guest, Mr. Eddie Broussard, President of Texas Capital Bank, Fort Worth, West Texas Region. Welcome, Eddie. So happy to have you here.
You bet, Shannon. Thank you for the opportunity.
So absolutely. Can't wait to have a conversation today and learn more about you and Texas Capital Bank. So to get started, Eddie, let's just go ahead and kind of out the gate, tell us a little bit, who is Texas Capital Bank? Little bit about your mission, your values, the locations that you have around the state, and just kind of your overall purpose.
Happy to. So Texas Capital Bank is a relatively young bank. We were started in 1998 in Dallas. So we're a Texas-based business bank, total assets of $40 billion. That would put us in the category of what I would call a mid-cap bank. There are a number of very large banks that are well-known, and a significant amount of community banks that are very important. We fall pretty much in the middle of those big banks and little banks at $40 billion. We have approximately 1,600 employees. We are located primarily in the state of Texas. We are in each of the major cities, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth. And the number of locations is an interesting question about banks because I think the importance of that is actually changing now. Historically, branches were very important to banking. But as we go forward, I think, and as most people begin to bank on their phone, the number of locations really becomes the number of phones that people are carrying around.
That's an interesting perspective. That is true, something you don't think about.
Exactly right. No, so there's been somewhat of a de-emphasis on actual physical locations because the new generations basically aren't going to branches. They do not go to branches. And particularly in our emphasis in banking, which is business banking and less of a consumer or retail banking, we have a very low number of branches, and that was our strategy as we began and still is our strategy as we sit here today.
Okay, very good. So, Eddie, let's talk a little bit about you. You have a really strong career background serving in as a president, a CFO, a COO, and various other senior-level positions among businesses, including leadership for a number of nonprofit groups. So if you could please tell us more about you, your story, your career path, and what has led you to be the president of Texas Capital Bank today.
So I went to college in Lubbock at Texas Tech and got out of college in the mid-80s, came to Fort Worth in banking. Back in the 70s and the early 80s, there were a lot of students that, as they graduated, accounting was a great career path, but banking was very much a career path for folks that were interested in finance and accounting but didn't really want to be an accountant. And so a number of my friends became bankers, and it sounded appealing to me. I love the marketing aspect. I love the personal aspect and the relationships that you build.
Were you a finance manager at Texas Tech?
Yes, I was. Got out with a BBA in finance and really was really hit the ground running working as a bank. So moved to Fort Worth in the mid-80s. Started my banking career. Banking in the late 80s in Texas was an absolute train wreck. I don't know if any of your listeners were around then or have studied and looked back. But banking in the late 80s, particularly in Texas and some of the areas of the country, really went through some significant struggles, both with oil and gas loans and real estate loans. At the end of the day, by the end of the late 80s and early 90s, virtually all of the holding company banks in Texas had failed. The bank that I actually went to work with out of college failed in 1989. And government came in and stood up most of those banks and then ended up selling them to other banks that entered the market. And so there was a big change in the late 80s in banking. Basically, that was also the time where the industry went from kind of a state-by-state banking laws to a more of an interstate banking across the country. And so a very interesting time, a very challenging time, but was able to learn a lot through that. And I stayed in banking for about 12 years and always had in the back of my mind that I would love to be on the other side of the desk from the banker and really, you know, run a business, put a business together and really understand how to do that. And so I had the opportunity to go to work for one of my clients. And I left banking, went to be the CFO of a wholesale distribution company here in Fort Worth, and spent about 6 years doing that, which was really a tremendous experience because as a banker, we understood financials and we understood trends and things like that. But it's totally different when you're actually in the company and you're trying to execute a strategy. My learning curve for the first 18 to 24 months after I left banking was for the most part straight up. But it was a valuable experience. And I ended up spending about 17 years with two different companies as a CFO, COO, and president. And then about 9 years ago, the second of those companies was out in North Carolina. So I'd moved my family to North Carolina, and we'd been out there for 11 years. The company I was with went through a transition, and I decided to leave, look for another company, or find a CFO job in Charlotte. We were about an hour from Charlotte. So I spent about 6 months looking around, and the economy in that area was very poor. The manufacturing base and the business base in rural North Carolina, and for that part, rural United States, a lot of those cities are struggling. A lot of the large employers from those cities had then been, you know, bought and sold and liquidated, and so. For the first time, I found myself really having to look for a job with a resume. Most of my career, I'd changed jobs, but it was really under my direction. And so for the first time in my career, I was back, you know, with a resume, you know, trying to figure out what I wanted to do, you know, for the next 15, 20 years. And ended up about 6 months into that search, wrote an email to 15 people that I knew back here in Fort Worth. That was really where my network of folks were outside of the industry I had been in. And long story short, I sent an email to 15 people, and the next day, 12 of those people had responded. Wow. To that email. And I told my wife, I said, I think the economy is different in Texas, because, you know, I sent one email and gotten more responses from that than I had for, you know, looking in North Carolina for 6 months. And so from that point forward, the idea of moving back to Texas and moving back to Fort Worth really took hold. And actually, some of the folks that I had been in banking with early on in my career were actually picked up the phone when they got that email and called me and suggested that I move back to Fort Worth and get back into banking. And so that was a bit of a leap for me to kind of go back to what I had been doing and could I do that. But I flew to Fort Worth. In the drive from DFW to downtown Fort Worth, I called my wife and I said, you know what, we should consider moving back here. I said, there's road construction everywhere I've been. They're building houses. I said, this economy here in Texas is absolutely on fire as it relates to the rest of the country. And so long story short, it didn't take long for us to move back to Texas. And actually, I did get back into banking and went to work for Texas Capital Bank at that time. And really wasn't sure if I could transition back into banking. Looking back over the last 8 years, it's been a really wonderful transition back into banking. I'm probably a much better banker today than I was in the beginning, having spent 17 years on the other side of the table. And so it really gives me a different perspective on what a bank, you know, is supposed to do and how they can help business grow and achieve their goals.
It's funny how life leads you down different paths, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I went 360 degrees in 30 years, which is really kind of a bizarre idea.
I get that. I think I've told you a little bit that, you know, I came from the financial services industry and then entered higher ed, and I think I'm better in this role now because of my experiences on the other side of the fence. But
exactly.
It's funny that you mentioned that. So when I first came to Fort Worth, you know, and I flew into DFW and the travel, I always have been told from an economic development perspective that orange barrels on the highway equates to progress.
That's right.
So that's kind of what led me here to Texas as well. So
Interesting.
So, Eddie, one of the key focuses, obviously, of this podcast and the conversation that we're having today relates to workforce development. And so if you could, for a minute, take yourself back to your 18-year-old self and think about your education and the career path and choosing and knowing what you wanted. Tell us a little bit about what advice you would go back and give your 18-year-old self, knowing what you know now.
Sure, you bet. I think the advice I wish I had had then and that I would give now is that instead of kind of focusing straight into a particular discipline, whether that be finance or accounting or a doctor or a lawyer, I love the idea of getting a much more diverse and well-rounded education, particularly in college when you have the time to kind of explore some other subjects and explore some other things. I probably would have taken more history and more English and some more liberal arts type stuff, just because I think that really adds to life in general, but also adds to your understanding and your emotional health and well-being as you're doing whatever it is you're doing, whether it be a banker or an attorney or running a business, is you just have a much broader base of understanding and exposure to different things. So I would encourage students to really spend some time and don't, you know, unless you are dead set on being a doctor or a dentist or an attorney, I would say really get a broad education and do some things that, you know, it aren't necessarily in your scheduled plan to get exposure to that stuff. I've been able to do that, you know, post education, and I would really love the idea of doing that at the college level just to see and understand some different things.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. You know, I talk to employers every single day, and I think being more well-rounded and having those experiences really helps with not only the soft skills or what I like to call the essential skills of each individual, as well as the emotional intelligence of being able to go into a position. And that is so key today, because my conversations with employers a lot of times these days is it's almost as if though the technical skill is becoming the commodity, where it's the essential skills, the ability to be well-rounded is really becoming that value-based need of the organization. So I appreciate your comments on that.
Exactly right.
So with that, let's say we have some students here at TCC or anywhere in the region, and they're interested in going into banking or finance, and that's kind of the direction that they want to head. What advice would you offer a young person interested in entering into this field? And as a follow-up to that, what advice on becoming a leader would you give those individuals today?
Sure, you bet. I think most folks understand banking at a general level and understand, you know, that you have a checking account and, you know, the banks maintain the security and take care of your money when you don't need it and make it available when you do. And so I would encourage someone, if they are interested in banking or finance or any sort of financial services, that they seek out either an internship or a job opportunity in a bank or with a financial service company, even at the entry level, just to get in to see kind of what happens and how it works and get a little bit of exposure to that industry. And there's a lot of different things and a lot of different disciplines that are within that industry that, you know, you can focus on. Traditionally, lending was kind of the backbone, but I would say today the area of cash management and data and tech are really becoming to the forefront of banking and financial services. So young folks are going to have a tremendous opportunity to help as banking changes. I think banking is changing significantly as we speak, to get a bit of exposure to that and realize that, you know, it's not necessarily the traditional education that banking has historically required. there is that, but it's very much about being nimble. And as Amazon and other companies, begin to disrupt industries, I believe the banking industry is actually being disrupted as we speak. And so to be on the cutting edge of where that's going, I think is a tremendous opportunity for young people. So I would say get exposure to the industry firsthand. And then if you can't, I would say seek out a professional in that industry and ask to shadow them or to visit with them. Most bankers are very social people and are more than willing to sit down with young people and answer questions and give ideas and thoughts. So if the idea of a part-time job or an internship doesn't work out, I would still seek out a financial professional and grab them and ask to go to lunch or to shadow them for a day.
Right, exactly. Mentorship.
Exactly right.
Very, very key. So let's transition a bit to a different topic. So commercial banks obviously have a large role in the economic development of a country. If you could, please, I know you talked a little bit about the state of what the banking industry was like in the 80s, but speak directly to Texas Capital Bank and the role it plays as an institution today in the economic development of this great state of Texas.
So at a base level, and there's a number of areas where I think Texas Capital Bank and other banks play in the economic development story or world. First and foremost, and kind of the most obvious is to provide additional capital for growth. Traditional lending is really adding to the capital or the base of a company in order for it to grow at a higher rate than it may be able to grow otherwise. And so leveraging the company's assets and leveraging the company in a lot of ways allows a company to grow quicker and more stable. So that's the obvious kind of first answer I would give to that is that banks are a wonderful source of adding capital, to the growth of a company or to a growth of an economy. And I think that has played out very well here in Texas. The other aspect is, as I mentioned, lending is kind of a more episodic event, but the actual managing of the cash is a day-to-day process. And so banks aid in managing your cash more efficiently and maximizing your cash through various products. The cash management of a company can really, really be fine-tuned to generate additional profits for the company and really, really help the company have the cash available when they need it, but not have it sitting idle when they don't. So lending is one, cash management for the company is two, and that really maximizes a company's ability to use its cash the highest and best when it needs it and then not have it sitting when they don't need it. The other aspect that I think that happens in through banks is really the banking community has historically and still today plays a very vital role in economic development, whether it be through the chambers or through the community colleges or through four-year universities, really attracting and retaining business in their communities, whether that be through board involvement or providing funds for initiatives, various ways to build the economic engine within a city and within a state. Banks have historically played a very key role in that, and I think we'll continue today and we'll continue. At Texas Capital, we spend a significant amount of time and money in the communities we're in, supporting the communities in every way, not just economically, but socially in every way possible. And I think that's a real benefit and makes a healthier community and a healthier place to live. So I think banks play a more subtle role in that, but very much a key role in the health and well-being of a community and the economic growth.
Absolutely. So as you know, one of the leadership hats at Tarrant County College here is direction over the Small Business Development Center of mm-hmm. Tarrant County. Mm-hmm. And I know you are all a great partner in that initiative. So in a sense, you're also educators, because I know we have a lot of people who show up at our door who
right.
don't have a lot of experience in starting a business or becoming an entrepreneur, and folks within your organization are always very helpful in trying to direct them and what they need to do and when it comes to their finances and such.
Yeah, mentoring and that financial education piece is key to the success of those small businesses.
Right. It certainly is. So Eddie, as a bank, you are in obviously daily communication with all sizes of businesses and different kinds of industry in the county. What is your assessment of the current economic state of North Texas and the recovery from the pandemic, looking out, let's say, the next 5 years, what you think's going to?
Yeah, you bet. I mean, we've obviously have all, you know, been through a year of just unprecedented activity that none of us understood, none of us knew how to react to. And so it was very interesting to kind of be on somewhat of the backside of that and to look back and see what happened and see what happened that was good and what happened that was bad. And so we obviously, as everyone else did early on in the pandemic, and just really hit the pause button and said, okay, well, what does this mean? And how is it going to play out through the economy and through, you know, the different business sectors? And I think we really paused for probably 60 days in our shop, you know, and tried to get our bearings of, okay, what does this mean and how do we go forward? I think one of the things that we found that if you run the bank and you run the company, just normal conservative principles that, you know, as crises happen, you're still buoyed through most of that because you made prudent decisions, you know, going into that. But, you know, there were things that happened that, you know, that were outside of people's control. Obviously, anything that had to do with hospitality and air and travel, you know, really took a hit, and no one really understood when that would actually come back. Thank goodness, you know, the last, you know, 60 days that has begun to come back. So it was really interesting to look back and see how that how companies fared through that. The other surprise out of that is there were a number of companies that did very, very well through COVID. One that comes to mind would be, you know, restaurants that were able to figure out how do we get food out the door and in a pickup situation. And those restaurants that were able to figure that out actually did very, very well. So it wasn't a situation where all companies suffered. There were companies that suffered indeed, but there were also companies that kind of held stable. And then there were companies that grew. I've seen companies that had grown 20 and 30% in 2020, which was absolutely mind-boggling when we look back. So I believe Texas was really one of the first states to begin to come out. We began to do things in the state from a gathering standpoint that was a little earlier than some of the states. And I think that really, you know, helped the economy here in Texas kind of get a kickstart to coming back out. And there were a number of events that from a sporting standpoint that ended up coming to Fort Worth and coming to Texas because we were open earlier than some of the other states and some of the other groups. And so that really, I think, kickstarted the engine. And we saw a real quick recovery begin to happen. And I think we still are seeing that today. Mm-hmm. I think the recovery is actually quite strong. And particularly in Texas, you know, we still have, I think we basically picked up where we left off. And that is a number of companies continue to move to Texas because of the business climate. And a number of folks are moving here, you know, to live here. So, you know, so it's the growth is incredible. And I think over the next few years, you know, through 5 years is a long time in today's world, but
that
I think,
is.
You know, I think in the next couple of years, Fort Worth will continue to grow at a record pace. And I think Texas will also continue to grow at a record pace, which should benefit all of us that live here and that end up moving here.
Right, exactly. So, and I just have to comment on your thing about the restaurants and how they thrived. The big benefit right now, we still get margaritas delivered to house, right?
That's right. Yeah. No. So. So there were a number of changes that were made through COVID that I think we're going to keep, and
there
that might
go.
Be one of them.
That goes in the plus column.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly right.
All right, Eddie, I want to quiz you a bit. I got a true or false question for you. Community colleges are an economic development engine of their communities.
Absolutely.
True or false?
True.
Can you provide some insight on your thoughts encompassing this statement?
Yeah, I think community colleges are really part of the backbone of the workforce. I mean, a growing economy is dependent on the workforce that is there and that is sustainable and that can sustain the growth. And so, and I'm talking about jobs at every level are needed. And I think community colleges are tremendous at really taking a big slice of that workforce development and really pushing that through. And what I love about Tarrant County College is its ability to move and to react and to change based on what they see. And so if you keep that nimbleness in what you're doing, you're gonna win, and you're gonna actually provide that workforce development that we so need here in Fort Worth and Tarrant County and Texas.
Yeah, definitely. Right now is definitely the time for that nimbleness and the ability to be able to adopt and adjust and make changes as necessary, because not only are we trying to help businesses learn to do a new way of business, but we also have had to do that. And so it makes a major impact. So if you could, Eddie, also speak a bit about the workforce development landscape of the commercial banking industry, and if you could give some examples of not only positions, but skill sets and business acumen characteristics and values that you're looking for in the talent that you hire.
You bet. So very interesting, and very timely based on the questions you've asked me so far and kind of where we are. And I'll speak to Texas Capital Bank specifically and then more of a broad answer. So we as a bank have actually pivoted and have kind of reevaluated the need for bringing young people into the industry and young people into the bank. So we have actually hired, somewhere between 55 and 60 folks off the college campus to come into the bank in the fall. That kind of number of new hirees into a training program is unprecedented those are numbers that would happen back in the 70s. Banks routinely, we were averaging probably bringing in 10 to 15 kids off the college campus into our program for the last 3 or 4 years. And so we have absolutely stepped up what we think we are going to need and what we want to build in the bank. So we feel strongly about bringing in the talent and really training them on, how we look at business and how we do what we do. I think that should be extremely encouraging for your students and for your folks as they come out there are banks, not just us, that are looking at, okay, we need to go back to the model where we hire strongly off the college campus to come in and begin to train through our program, because we have so many vacancies now that there's a big gap between what we need and folks that are coming out of school. Mm-hmm. We need those 5 and 7 year folks that just aren't there. So we made a very conscious decision to really push in and step into our training and development. So we are very much on a hiring push to get young folks into the bank and train them. I think a number of banks are beginning to look at and doing that. And I would say the other exciting part about that is historically those folks would either kind of go up the production and the loan officer side of the bank, or possibly the credit and the risk side of the bank. But I think now we're going to have a whole new window of opportunity, and that's on the tech side of the bank and the data and the digital side of the bank that should be very, very interesting and very fun for folks coming in. I think there's, as I said, the banking is moving much more into a digital world and not an 8-to-5 Monday through Friday world, but a 24/7 world where money is going to move nonstop anytime. And so that's really going to break the old paradigms of banking and the Federal Reserve. And so it's a very interesting time in banking, and I would say a very exciting time for a young person to get involved in the industry.
Okay. So just out of curiosity, from the industry perspective, you know, I spent 17 years in the financial services industry, and one of the things that I admired about that industry is the fact that they were able to maintain students as they're coming out of colleges, and they had that sticky factor, if you will, mm-hmm. where there was a career path set forward for them.
Exactly.
From their insurance license to their securities license to their designations. Do you see across the industry efforts being made in that space to be able to provide career paths for individuals to maintain that sticky retention over a course of time?
Yeah, no, I think there are paths. If you know, if somebody wants to, take a track through, lending to get to management, that track is still very much available. But the really wonderful thing is there are a number of other tracks that I think can get to the C-suite. other than just lending nowadays, and it's treasury management, and it's investment banking, and other parts of the banking pie that really historically weren't as rich as they are today. But I think those are going to become more and more important, and provide a number of career paths within the bank, within financial services industry that you could go on track and really work through. The other thing, and you're aware of this, and I look at probably the last 20 years, my generation would go to work for one bank, and you would hope to get the Rolex watch at 50 years, with that same bank. If you go back to the late 80s when all the banks failed, I think it really shattered that paradigm of, the bank will always be there. And so, what happened is, we got young folks into the bank, but they began to look around and would run a particular career path for a while, and then may jump to another career path, and I actually think that's fine. I think that's really, again, when you get back to a broader base understanding and a much more emotional well-being of understanding. Okay, well that was important here, but what's important over in this aspect of the bank or in this aspect of the business, to have that broader knowledge. Young people today move a lot more, and my initial reaction to that was, well, you're not gonna get, it's gonna take a longer time to get to the C-suite if that's your goal. But I actually think it's actually a better way to get to the C-suite nowadays, is that you understand with a little more detail more than one area of the bank.
The days of the 20 years and the Rolex watch are not so much there anymore.
No, I've got my years, but I don't have my watch.
No, I don't have your watch. I don't have mine yet either.
Exactly.
We're still working on it.
That's right.
So, Eddie, from your purview, what is the future of the banking industry? We discussed a little earlier how online banking has forced a number of branches to close over the past decade. What is the future of work for banking and those pursuing a career in the field?
Yeah, I think it is as bright as it's ever been, and it's because of the disruption, and it's because of the change that's going on in financial services. We all understand, or we all probably do today, pay our friends and pay our other folks with Venmo and PayPal and which bypasses the traditional banking. That, as it stands today, is pretty much on the personal, one person to consumer to consumer, if you will. But I think we will see that move into the business world, and when we will see that move into a B2C or a B2B, where it's not a, as I said before, it's not an 8-to-5 Monday through Friday industry. It's a 24/7 industry. Money will move at all times of the day, and the idea of managing that money for a business will be a 24/7 aspect, as opposed to waiting till Monday to see what your balance is,
right,
before you make a decision. So,
right.
So those paradigms are being smashed, which I think brings tremendous opportunity for young folks to come in and understand the digital piece, the social media piece, the new financial world, as it will be, particularly in the B2B world. And so I think it's changing. I think now is a wonderful time to to get in and be a part of that change, help drive that change, and really probably have an understanding and an ability to flex with that change way more than somebody my age would be.
Yeah, definitely a pivotal point in the history of banking and workforce
exactly.
General right now. So, well, Eddie, it has been wonderful having you on the show today. Really appreciate your insight. Any last words or thoughts you'd like to share with our listening audience?
You know, the only other thing I would add is, you know, banking has historically been very much a community and a key community player in a community, whether it be a small town, medium-sized town, or a large town. And I think banks will continue to be that. And the banks that are successful are the ones that do that well, that interact with the community at all different levels, from an education standpoint, whether it be, you know, higher education or secondary education or early education. I think that's key to economic development and the health and well-being of a community. And I think banks will continue to step into that role, and that brings really the quality of life for both the community and the banker. So that is a piece that has been there, and I think that's a piece that will continue to be there. And the opportunity to speak with you today is a part of that, and we are delighted to be a part.
Well, thank you so much. And so I would like to thank my guest today, Eddie Broussard from Texas Capital Bank, and I appreciate the listening audience, and thank you for joining us today. And we look forward to seeing you on the next edition of the Workforce Lens. Thank you.
Thank you.